I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports ad free. That's amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
All right, guys, welcome back to the Rick Shields Golf Show podcast, everybody. I'm your host, Rick Shields. I'm here with producer Guy. This is episode number 82. Did you have a good weekend, pal?
I did, but first of all, let's not pretend this is the first time we've done this.
I like doing it that way.
We did it about 2 minutes ago and everything was going well. And then Matt, who's behind the camera, realised one of the cameras was fuzzy because I kicked it when I had an emergency wee before we started. So this is the second time we've done this. But anyway, in answer to your question, Rick, I had a good weekend.
I'll pretend I didn't hear what you said first time. I believe you went out for some dinner.
Well, on Saturday, I went to Liverpool with my mum and my two nieces. And we had a nice day out. Went to go to Nando's. Unfortunately, we went to Nando's and said, "Can we have a table, please?" Said no. It was an hour wait before we could even join the queue.
Wow.
Which wasn't very good. So we had a Five Guys instead.
No, well, that's not a bad switch.
It was, but I believe somebody spotted me.
You were spotted throwing your weight around, yes, outside the front of Nando's. Then you know who I am?
Yeah.
The co-host of the Rick Shields Golf Show podcast.
I know James Robinson and my good mate is Ed Brown. And he went, "Whoa."
But do you really know Derek Chan?
Exactly. He said, no idea.
So guys, this week's episode, we're going to chat a little bit about golf, about my most previous round at JCB, the final of the Break 75, which hopefully everybody enjoyed. I think the reception for Break 75 has been outstanding.
Mm-hmm, it has.
The concept that we came up with earlier in the year.
It's about a good idea, wasn't it?
Very good idea. Well done, Guy.
Thanks.
I think, have we told the story about how we came up with the idea?
I don't know if we have, actually.
So, was it during golf courses still? It was during golf courses were still closed. And it was, yes, probably about March time, 2021.
And no, it was earlier than that.
Was it?
Yeah, I can find out in the email now. One sec.
So, we were sat in the garage, ready to film a club review in my home simulator of the Callaway Irons. And we just all sat round. It was me, Guy and Harry. And we were just like, how do we make this video interesting? Because we couldn't get on the golf course. We couldn't do anything. And we ended up inevitably having a brainstorming session, thinking about, well, how can we make something fun this year? What would be a fun series of videos that would get me out playing a little bit more as well, but also would kind of really take the audience on a bit of a journey?
Yes.
What was the date?
It was the 27th of January.
January?
Yeah, I sent an email. It looks quite good, this email. You think I knew what I was doing if you saw this. But the format at the time, so obviously it's changed a little bit, was... Matt, does my audio sound all right, by the way? Yeah, okay. I feel like I sound a bit weird. Might be in my headphones. We were going to have 14 episodes every Friday at 4 p.m.
So we weren't far off.
We weren't far off at all.
We had 12 episodes, but inevitably we did have 14 because we were going to do almost a preview episode. Do you remember?
That was what we were going to do, yeah.
But it kind of didn't quite work and it ended up becoming the trailer that you would have seen just before the Break 75 series. And we also threw in a clip from this very podcast on the main channel.
So it's probably about right, actually.
It was actually 14 episodes in total.
We were going to have them 10 minutes long every video. That didn't stick to original plan. We wanted to make them super, super, super snappy, but that was too hard. I don't think it would have worked, actually, in the end.
It was... If you think about this, in 18 holes going round playing golf, that takes roughly, when we're filming, 4 to 5 hours comfortably. Now, these videos could be an hour plus long. They could be 5 minutes, but you wouldn't see a lot in 5 minutes. But then also an hour would be too long. So we had this premise of being very short, snappy. I think the sweet spot sat somewhere between 15 minutes and 20 minutes in the end.
But what was weird, though, is it's not always the length, it's the actual story. So some, correct, of them that were longer actually felt shorter because there was more going on. But I think for my actual probably favourite was probably the last one at JCB, weirdly. I think it had everything.
I felt like what's always a good sign of a good video, certainly when we're looking at putting a really good YouTube video together, and Harry, who did all the editing for the Break 75s, big shout out to Harry. Also, Matt did a lot of the filming, who's behind the camera today. And also, I don't want to neglect Tim, another one of our senior editor, does loads of the coaching videos that you see online. So big shout out to him as well. I want to give him some love too. But when Harry shows us a preview, I know it's a good video when I have to say, how long are we through this preview? Mm. Because it feels like I've been watching for 2 minutes. And sometimes he says, oh, we're 10 minutes through. And it's like, wow, this feels like a good video. Because for those first 10 minutes, I've been absolutely engrossed. I can't wait to watch more. And hopefully that comes across in the videos. I like the little kind of quirky edits we've had in the video, different ways of filming it, different ways of putting it together. I think Harry's music choices have been outstanding, really set the scene on certain aspects of it. So as an overall product, we're really happy with it. There will be possibly one or two special episodes coming soon, which you can look forward to.
There will be.
I think one definite, two not going to particularly happen now, but we'll see what happens in the future. And then season two will be out next year, probably start at about April time again.
Will it still be Break 75 then?
I think that's still a nice number.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
You know, weirdly in the end, I did it 5 out of 12 times, which has let me down a little bit. There was, I think I shot 77 three times.
Did you?
Obviously I had a couple of nightmares. Two at JCB, one at St. Anne's Old Links, and then just a couple of kind of high 70s. So I still think 75 is a nice number.
Mm.
I feel right now, as the end of the series has approached, I feel like now I've got 9 months to get ready for next year's.
No pressure.
I don't know what I'm going to do different.
I might
put a few more balls or something.
Yeah, but I think the level that you're at, the number is right. Because like you said, if you really put a lot of effort into improving, and you did, and it was Break 75, you'd probably do it a bit more easily. Yeah. But I think it's a good number at the minute, because like you go out and you could do it, you could not. I think that's what people enjoy as well. It's a realistic... It's probably more reflective of people's handicap. I know, again, your handicap's been given as plus one, but in reality, if you go out and shoot 3 over, you're pretty happy with that.
Yeah.
Or 2 over, whatever.
Exactly.
But no, it's been good, and I think people have enjoyed it, and there's going to be more episodes coming in the future.
Yes.
And I'm excited for it.
And I think going back to what we just talked about there, this kind of idea of setting certainly my own parameter, it was exactly now, 4 years ago, since I last qualified, I last really played competitive golf, and the last time I actually participated in regional open qualifying.
Well,
my last open qualifying took place in 2017 at West Lancs, where I finished in style with a hole-in-one on 17 and a par on 18. I hung up my open qualifying boots and went, I'm okay with that now because I know where my limit sits.
Well, open qualifying was this weekend.
It was.
And today, well, this comes out Tuesday, it is the final qualifying. So we should know by the end of today, well, not actually today that we're recording this, but by the time this podcast's out, who's got in, who's not got in, etc.
I'm going to give a very, very quick summary of what open qualifying is. Certainly for people in the States that might not know it. A lot of people in the UK might not know what it is.
Okay.
Over the last few years, typically, you'll have a regional qualifying golf course, which is, as it is, a regional qualifying course. Normally, there's probably about 8 regional qualifying golf courses around the country. And on one particular day, normally at the end of June, there is an 18-hole competition, and a top section of each regional qualifiers, the lowest scores, will qualify to play in final qualifying, which normally takes place about a week or so later at a different venue, at a final qualifying venue, where typically 3 players qualify after playing 36 holes of golf. And those 3 players from 4 different final qualifying events, so 12 in total, play in that year's Open mm-hmm. Championship. This year it's been slightly different. There's only 4 regional qualifying venues. Once you qualify from there, it's split over 2 days. More field went through to final qualifying. Final qualifying takes place today at the same venues as regional qualifying. I'm making this sound dead simple. Again, regional final qualifying is 36 holes. Top 3 get in. 12 golfers, a mix of amateur golfers,
yep,
who are playing off scratch or better, teaching pros, ex-tour pros, mm-hmm, tour pros,
mm-hmm,
anybody has the chance potentially to be playing in the Open in those 12 spots.
The magic comes from, like you said, if you're a scratch handicap amateur or a PGA pro or just a pro, You're 54 holes away from playing in the Open.
Crazy.
And that is why the Open, obviously the name, the Open, is kind of so kind of magical. And I think you would find that most PGA golf pros at your pro shop, at your local golf shop, have probably tried it at least once, haven't they?
Definitely.
Most, because why would you not? Is it 120 quid or something to enter?
I think it's getting close to 150
right, 150 quid to enter. Certainly if you're an amateur, because actually, I'm going to come on to this in a moment, there's a guy from my golf club who entered. And in fact, there was a couple of guys. There was one guy who I'm going to touch on in a moment who entered. And his reason for playing was literally, it's 150 quid to play a good golf course in its best condition at its most tough test, you know, back tee, super thick, rough, etc. And you've also got the chance of playing with either a pro or another elite amateur who may go on to be a famous tour pro in the future.
It's a good way of looking at it.
So it's a day out, and it's putting yourself, because a lot of these guys that are amateurs might be the best player at the club, or even at county level, or whatever it might be. So there might be a big fish sometimes in a small pond, and you go to open qualify, and then there's some real serious golfers in there, and it puts you on a level where you see how good you actually are.
Definitely.
And again, it's that dream. If these scratch handicappers, it's not going to happen probably, but if a scratch handicapper has three rounds where everything goes right, it could happen, maybe.
Yeah.
And that's the exciting thing.
There's no... If you got through and you played great in regional, great in final, you shot the lowest of the scores, it doesn't matter what your handicap was, what your background is, where you came from, who, whatever it may be, you have a chance of playing in the Open. So, we've got some great news.
Very good news.
Because your friend of mine, friend of the show...
Yes.
Who had an amazing podcast episode. You'd have heard it. I can't remember what number it was now. Probably in the 50s, would it have been?
I don't know. A while ago.
James Robinson.
Yes.
Who played in the Open in 2019 at Carnoustie.
18
at Carnoustie.
Yeah, 19 was in Ireland. 20 didn't happen.
Yeah. He participated in regional qualifying. He shot 5 under par.
Bossed it.
He is through to final qualifying today.
He's an absolute baller. And like you said, did he have no bogeys?
0 bogeys.
That's outrageous.
5 birdies at his home course with a relatively amount of pressure. Pressure from our audience starting to follow him now. He's got like 16,000 followers on Instagram now.
Yeah.
He's been participating in Road to the Open, that the documentary at the Open.
That was a very good... A shout to the Open for that. Those videos were really good. They documented 4 people on their journey to hopefully qualifying for the Open. And James, one in particular, was class. And he featured you on it as well.
He gave us a nice little shout out. You'd have also seen him from the 2 videos we filmed, or 3 videos we filmed with James, where first off, he took on the challenge of, can he shoot under par with 70-pound golf clubs?
Yeah.
Bossed it, like you said. Yeah. Can he challenge me with playing with only 4 clubs? Smash me. And also the little cool coaching video that he did, 5 tips to play better around the short game, and when he pitched one in from like 50 yards.
Well, you know, he's got such a following now and he's so cool and everyone aspires to beat him. When you hear the kids on the streets now, they're wearing like some new trainers or sneakers, they don't go, oh, they're sick or they're cool. They go, oh, they're Robbo them. Because everyone wants to be Robbo. Like, I like a new Hurts, Robbo that. Isn't that new TaylorMade driver? It's proper Robbo. Because that just means cool now.
Guys want to be him, girls want to be with him.
Yes.
But he's happily married.
with a child.
So, yeah, he's qualified. Everyone here from the Rich Hills Golf Show massively support him. Hopefully he continues.
Matt doesn't. That's always slagging him off.
He's not like him.
No, he hates him.
Hopefully continues. And you never know, at the end of Tuesday, when you're watching England versus Germany, and England go through in penalties, and we get the good news that James Robinson has also qualified for the Open, the champagne is being popped. Even you're going to pop a little bit of bubbly on Tuesday night.
I might have
night.
A second monster of the day and go mad. Serious question now. Would you rather Robbo get through to the Open and England get beat by Germany, or England win and Robbo not go through? No, I think you'd go Robbo.
I think I would.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, I think... I'm sorry, England, but for me...
Robbo comes first.
Robbo is priority.
Yeah.
If I had a golden ticket and I could say only one thing happens, Robbo's playing in the Open.
Your hair's getting more like Robbo's as well every
day. I wish he was. Fucking hell. I'd take his hair any day.
No,
I'd take any part of him.
Literally. As Nat said to a bishop. But no, Robbo has killed it. And regardless of what he does today on Tuesday, he has, for someone that coaches full time with a very young child, very, very busy golf coach, to go out and shoot 5 under with no bogeys is awesome golf. So he's really kind of lived up to his hype. Well, not his own hype. He's not created the hype, but the hype we've created, if you like, he's lived up to.
Doesn't it also show that talent is so paramount? So you were telling me the story and I was following it a bit as well, because I know a little bit about him and his lad who's really good on Instagram. Oh God, I forgot his lad's name. That's going to annoy me.
Who?
Ben.
Oh, no, Ben Barry. Cadder. Yes.
So Barry Taylor, right, who is a golf pro at Clark's Golf Centre, where you go and practice sometimes. Really nice guy. Had loads of like local event victories. Has he ever played in the Open?
No, he's got through regional before. He's never got through final.
I was following his journey so much yesterday because after 9 holes, he was 3 under par at West Lancs.
Yeah.
And then, unfortunately, had a little bit of a nightmare finish and just missed out by 1. But again, Barry's not, he doesn't practice, does he?
Yeah, so as Rick said then, Barry Taylor is a golf coach, used to be a full-time player, certainly on like the local tours. He's very good at kind of Lancashire level and country level. I think he's probably his best accolade was that he played in the PGA Cup, which is where the best PGA golf pros in the country play against. It's like a Ryder Cup, but for PGA pros, basically. Yeah. But he's a really good player, but he hasn't played competitive golf, I'd say, for years, and probably hasn't even played a round of golf. I think it's been for a year or so.
He clips
a few balls in between lessons and stuff. Yeah, and he shot 2 over. So he currently, as it stands now, he's the 8th reserve, which he's probably not going to get through on that. But like you said, just to show, there's comes a level where obviously you have to practice, but some guys and girls just have a level of talent where they're always going to be able to get it round, aren't they?
They just have it.
Well, it's a bit like, probably similar but a bit different, but like when you watch Ian Woosnam at the Masters, and we said about that the other week, he's obviously not going to win it. He's not embarrassing himself. He's getting it round. Look, he's got it to a level, hasn't he? And I think some of these guys, I mean, 2 over around West Lancs when you've not played for ages is really impressive. Another, so that guy I mentioned before from My Golf, I just want to touch on that. So there's a guy who is a scratch golfer, I think, at My Golf. He might actually be lower now with the World Handicap System, because I know a few people have come down off that. His name's Dave Jean-Renard. I think it's like a French surname, but he's an English guy. And he shot 9 over at West Lancs. But this is, again, for me, I know we talk about this a lot on podcasts and people might be getting a bit sick of it, but this levels of ability. So Dave is a scratch golfer. So at my club, he's one of the best players. He's won club champs a handful of times.
I was going to say, he's competing every time club champs is on, isn't he?
I've not played him for years, but he's not a massive hitter, but keeps it straight, can get it round, and round his home course, he's a comfortable, genuine scratch golfer.
Really good at, like I say, playing that golf course that he's played 100 times.
Yeah, and he can score really well. So he went to qualify it, and he shot 9 over 8-1. He's come tied 95th. So he's far from embarrassed himself. He shot 9 over, which is probably the kind of worst he'd want to really shoot. But again, not a horrendous score, is it, 81, really? But it just, again, goes to show the levels. The scores that have qualified so far is 1 over. So he's about 8 shots away from qualifying.
Yeah.
But at a local golf club, he is what you call an elite player. So again, that kind of big fish in a small pond. And it's just that level of, like, every golf club, again, has got the scratch golfer, the plus one golfer, the elite junior. But even to get through the first stage of open qualifying, it's just that different level. And I messaged him before and said, you know, I was doing the podcast today, and did he mind if we mentioned his name and his score? And he said, absolutely no problem at all. He was playing pretty well, he said, although he got 81. He was only 1 over for 15 of the holes, but then 8 over for the other 3. So as we see with these links courses, you have a couple of bad holes, it just destroys you.
So he needs to make doubles and triples.
100%. But he said, actually, as well, he said, all in all, it was a great experience. When am I a decent club golfer, which was quite modest, but nothing more than that. So it's very modest, really. Ever going to get the chance to play with a likely future tour pro around West Lancs for £150? Loved every second of it.
Very good.
And he actually weirdly played with Josh Greer, who is the Australian young lad who featured in your Break 75 video with Minwoo Lee
at
King's Barnes.
Who plays off +5.
Who got
and he
through.
Qualified.
Yeah. Wow, mad small world, isn't it, really?
Crazy, isn't it? So Josh qualified, James Robinson qualified, a friend of mine from college who was the best golfer in college by a million miles when I was there, Chris Hansen, qualified. I think he was nearly winning it. Was there any other names that you know of?
Like
actually qualified. I know Sam Avery from St. Anne's Old Links.
Did he get through?
He qualified.
Oh my days.
Yeah. There was a 19-man playoff at St. Anne's Old Links. I think he was in it and qualified.
Oh, that's awesome. I didn't realise that. Oh yeah, he's there, yeah. Wow.
It's cool, isn't it?
That's really good golf.
Shout out, because I think people want to know. I think Dan Webster did solid.
Yes. So
it wasn't his best round of golf ever. I think he shot 10 over. But considering only last week he participated in Ironman.
Yeah.
Was it an Ironman or what's the difference, actually?
I think an Ironman's longer. I can't remember. He did it. Well, he did the one that's a marathon, a massive bike ride. Yeah. So whichever one that
Whatever
was,
it is, it's ridiculous.
It was ridiculous, yeah.
I think he raised £17,000 for Alderhay Hospital, where his son was. Big shout out to Dan. I think he's done an amazing job there. And actually, I'm sure he'll be slightly disappointed about his result, but good on him.
The elephant in the room.
Peter Finch.
He shot 7 over at West Lancashire, which is 79, and he came tied 74th. So from qualifying, he was 8 shots off.
It's really interesting because I feel like
seven shots off.
Yeah, because 1 over qualified at West Lancs. I feel like this year, as I was looking at it, from kind of looking at it from the outside perspective, I've not played golf with Pete for a while, but from the outside perspective, I felt like he was trending in the right direction. I felt like this year with the things that you couldn't have a crowd at West Lancs, there's no audience. That's something that I found really hard to play in front of. I don't know if that might have suited him. There was a much better chance of getting through regional qualifying because there was more spots available. But unfortunately, it didn't go to plan. He didn't qualify, which I'm kind of surprised about to some degree because I think he's put a lot more work into his game this year. I feel like he looks like he's swinging it better, hitting it better. But it begs that question again. You look at the guys who have qualified, the ones that we know somewhat personally now, Josh, James, Chris Hansen, whoever else, they just have that ability to score outrageously well, regardless of pressure. Mm-hmm. Like, they just have that ability to get the ball in the hole in less shots than most.
Yeah.
I think that's where Pete's lacking at the moment. I don't feel like he can put a score together that resembles a 5, 6, 7 under. But if you said that to me, can Josh do that, who we played with at Kings Barnes? Yes. Can James Robinson do that? Yes.
Yeah, but in fairness, I get what you're saying, and this might end up being a clip on the YouTube channel, I'm sure, so I want to just get this in before anybody starts commenting things, not listening to what I'm going to say. Fan of Pete, I wouldn't class him as a friend as such, but I'm because I don't really know him that well, but he's a nice guy, and whenever I'm with you, we have a bit of chat, and he asks how my family doing and stuff, so I can't fault him as a bloke, first things first. But what I would like to kind of, my opinion is, this is where social media is, I think, can be false. Because even you just said that, it looks like he's doing well.
That's it.
On what basis? Because I can put, and I've done this before myself, I'll hold my hands up, clips on Instagram holding a chip. That could be for a triple bogey. But if it goes in, it's a good clip for Instagram.
Could have been your 10th attempt.
And again, another thing to be honest about, I've put a couple of swing videos on Instagram. I'll make sure it's the best swing out of the bunch. Yeah. Where I like, I might not actually, the result might be terrible, but if it looks in the positions I want to see myself in, I'll put it on.
Yeah.
So that's where social media and YouTube, and you know this well as anybody, it's not always, it can't, well, your scores are real because your scores in 75 are what you've shot, but you could put clips from when you've shot 85 and a 75, looks like you've shot 6 under, a smoke drive, a chip close, a long hold putt,
yeah,
and someone could go, God, really, looks like he's playing well. Well, you shot 85.
I think that was something that really people loved about the 75s is there was probably two main examples where, let's say the first tee shot on JCB, the most recent one when I dunked it in the water, I could have been so easy just to go, actually, guys, I'm going to take that again.
100%.
But it's that's what happens in golf.
Exactly.
When I played at Hillside and left it in the bunker when playing with Spencer and made a triple bogey, that's golf. Mm. Like, you don't get these retakes. And I didn't have these retakes. I wanted it to be authentic. And I think that's where it is. Like, I could have easily made those break 75s look like I shot 70, 68 every single time.
I could have made that happen. And with like, you know, you're just saying then what Pete looks like he's doing off videos and stuff. But when it comes to obviously playing golf and putting a score in your hand, forget Instagram and forget YouTube. It's a different kettle of fish completely, isn't it? And like you said then about you don't think he's got that 5, 6 under in him. Maybe he's not, but that's not what you're asking for, open qualifying. You're asking for 1 over.
Yeah.
So it's a different level. And obviously Pete massively does it, and his kind of mantra is that, he wants to qualify for content because people enjoy watching it. And he also has this kind of idea that him playing in competitive golf, he might learn things about his own game that he can then transcend to the viewer, which again, fair enough. You know, if he's playing in competitions and he feels like his head's gone or something's happened or a swing fault's really cost him a shot or whatever, he can then tell that to the viewer and hopefully help their game. So again, that makes sense. But the level, there's a big level there. And, you know, this year he's obviously had the ability to have a personal trainer. He's got obviously a simulator in his academy, his studio, we can hit balls all the time. He's having lessons. He's got all the best equipment fitted to him perfectly. This was his best year at getting in.
I think looking at it, this was his best chance. I do.
So
I'm intrigued to see where it goes next. Does he continue it? Does he try it for? Because, I mean, I stopped doing qualifying for the Open in 2017 when I was doing the series of Quest for the Open. I did it in 15, 16, 17. After 3 years, I realised I've got no bloody chance.
Yeah.
Like, that's it. At the moment, Pete's done, he didn't do 15, he did 16, 17, 18, 19, didn't do 20 because there wasn't one, 21. So he's had 5 attempts now, plus the ones that he's had previously. I don't know where, I know, probably a question for Pete, where do you end up drawing the line and going, I don't know if I can shoot that low enough. But that's the thing with the Open. It's £150 and you have three rounds at it.
That's it. In one sense, why should you ever stop? Because if it's £150, without being funny, is not a lot of money, I'm sure, to him. It, certainly for the content he's making, it's nothing. £150, you have, you know, all you need to do, and I'm using that term loosely, all you need to do is have three of the best rounds of your life and you're in the Open. Even for him, I'm sure he wants to get through the first bit, which, he could shoot one over on them. Yeah. I'm sure he could. Yeah, he could do it today.
Of course he can.
But it's just that thing, and this is the beauty of the Open, but also what you need to be realistic about is anybody who's off scratch or better can enter, and it's only three rounds of golf, but it's actually a lot more than that. And the analogy we thought of before, which is a bit silly, I know, and I use this analogy a lot, but we've got a dartboard in the back off camera. If you give me three darts, and I said, get a 180, I'll give you $100,000. I'm going to have a go at it, and I might do it. But I'm probably not going to do it, am I? And it's almost like a gamble, isn't it?
Would you pay for £150 for it?
Well, I probably would for a go, yeah. Because if I do it, which I think I could do, is no. I've hit 180. I've never hit 180. I've hit treble 20 loads of times. So why can't I do it now?
You know what? Almost even a better analogy is like each dart is each qualifying event.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, okay.
And the first dart is regional qualifying. Yeah, I can bang, do, I've hit 60. Yeah. The next round is the first round of final qualifying. Well. Yeah. Bang, I've hit it. And then the last dart is the second round final qualifying to get in the Open, or to, for your analogy, to win £100,000. Like, your hands like this, shaking like crazy. I mean, that's the different levels. I've got a question.
Go on.
Can a YouTuber who makes content, okay, there's lots of them now, lots of golf YouTubers, can a YouTuber who documents their story or puts themselves out there making videos, that's their job, can they have the ability and the skill to get into the Open?
Absolutely.
Because this weekend, I was tracking a lot of the YouTube golfers. A lot of them didn't have the best performance.
But this is the problem, right? And obviously, I love YouTube golf.
And I'm not going to call anyone out because that's for other people to look into.
But,
it's
but
not,
you've had bad scores, which you've talked about.
And I want to touch on that 100%, in a minute.
But what I want to try and get off my, not get off my chest, it's stupid. And I just want to, again, preempt this before anyone says anything. Every guy we're talking about, I'm sure, would go and beat me 10-8. So it's not about me thinking I'm better than any of these. That's not relevant. But people that make YouTube content obviously do it to entertain the viewer, to educate them, to inform them and all that, and it's great. But I think, and I'm involved, I'm part of this almost problem, if you want, I get sucked into it to think they're better than they actually are. Most of these guys that are making content on YouTube are decent players who can played for 10, 15, 20 years and get themselves around a golf course. But that is one thing. Doing it properly with these guys who are serious, serious golfers is a different kettle of fish, and the scores are reflected in that. There's no reason why somebody... It's not like, it, you know, you could document your round and then edit it, but on YouTube it might take a couple of hours to do so. You can still balance that with a really heavy workload of golf practice and being an elite golfer. That's doable. But the people from the current crop, there's none of them really that are that amazing.
The only ones that... And I know I got a little bit of a slagging off for saying this last time. The only ones I've seen a little bit more promise now, because I've seen a bit more resulty type golf, is like Mika from Good Lads, Mika Morris. But I don't know, again, I've not seen him in a competition such. YouTube golf, when it's just cameras and it's entertaining, like I feel like I'm in my absolute element when I am in front of camera and I'm talking and I'm like, right, guys, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to hit this shot. I'm going to hit a little draw off that tree. I'm going to do this. This is what I'm going to do. Blah, 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 blah. Hit, oh, yeah, look at that shot. How good is it? I'm very verbal in the way I'm expressing it. I'm turning back to camera. I'm giving it a cheeky wink. I'm walking off, got a bit of swag, walking down the fairway. That's how I feel like I play my element. Playing competitive golf is not that.
Completely different.
You don't talk. You don't get excited. Really, you can't do, because other people, you can't be doing what I just did then, because I'm gonna spin it back, that question, because when I played competitively as a YouTuber, I thoroughly didn't enjoy it. Not thoroughly is probably the wrong word, but I found it very different to obviously playing just golf on camera, but playing competitive golf, when you know you've got an audience that are following you and they want to know your result, I found when I was playing golf in these competitions, if it was going really well and I was playing solid, I was already thinking in my head, what's going to be my Instagram post after this round of golf? Like, I can't wait to get on Instagram with me next to the leaderboard going, hey guys, I've shot 67 today. I'm leading in the clubhouse. Mm-hmm. How good am I? But on the flip side, there's so many times as well, you'll be playing and you double bogey the first few holes and you go, oh crap, what for? How am I going to explain this now on Instagram? How am I going to tell my audience that, oh guys, I just didn't have it today. I've shot 7 over again.
Do you think that's the difference though? Certainly in the UK, I'm sure the people in the US I might not be aware of or might forget, but everybody over here has been a YouTuber who then goes, actually, I'm going to try and do X, Y, and Z. I'm going to try and get on the tour. I'm going to try and get into the Open. If it was the other way around, if it was an actual seriously good golfer who then said, actually, I might document a bit of this journey, then that's a different kettle again, different story in it.
Because they've got the pedigree already. It's just whether then they'd have the on-camera presence, but you can learn that. Like, it would be really interesting. Someone like Josh Greer.
Yeah.
Who played with me at King's Barnes, qualified for final qualifying. As he got it in him to potentially also do what he's doing with the ability he's got, but also to make a YouTube channel and to be good on YouTube as an entertainer.
Yeah, but then again, if he's doing well at his golf, is he going to be bothered
to?
Exactly. And it's a hard balance. I think people do get disillusioned by some of the people on YouTube because they see them go and shoot level par, like you said, in a vlog. But not only is everything different in terms of how it feels, the pressure with your friends, course is set up differently as well.
So
West Lancs yesterday, I imagine, I might be totally wrong, will be set up well different than if we'd have gone 6 weeks ago from Essebau. They'll be on the furthest back tees, the hardest pins probably, the rough will be long. It's different, isn't it?
Yeah.
So,
and again, it's a bit like, I know we've, like, if I went and played JCB in February off the yellow tees, I could get way closer to par.
Exactly.
But playing off the back tees, 7,500 yards, when the rough's up to your bloody hip, that's a different game.
I think my final bit on this, and it's, I don't know why I feel so passionate about it, I wish all these people that go into Open Qualifying and make YouTube videos all the best. They are quite brave, like you said. They're putting themselves out there, knowing full well their score will get scrutinised by tens of thousands of people, potentially.
That's why I stopped playing competitive golf.
100%. So fair play to Pete, to James Wiltshire, to all these guys. But the only thing I do kind of stand by is, I do think people think they're far better than they actually are. I really do, because you watch them on the odd video make a nice birdie here and there.
You think the player thinks they're better than they are, or the audience think that player's better than they are?
I think the player thinks they're better than they are, or lets on that they're better than they are. Maybe they don't believe it deep down. I think the audience gets sucked into it.
I definitely believe the audience think they're better than they are, because even me, like a couple of weeks ago, I had a guy going, I was in the car park at the Marriott, and they'd seen the handicap video and gone, oh, well done, Rickoff, plus one. I'm thinking, oh, don't be fooled. I'm not really. I know on paper now with these, but I'm off plus one on paper. I don't believe I am really. I still believe I'm a 3 handicapper, 4 handicapper. And again, it's just that it's that balance between being honest with the audience, being transparent, and going, like, say, holding your hands up and going, okay, I might not be as good as I think I am, or I'm gonna play. Like, I feel like if James Robinson played all of them, wipe the floor with them without even breaking sweat.
And the other thing we touched on before off camera is handicap. Now, I know, again, someone's going to probably say, well, pull to turn pro off 4. But most of these guys, you know, who are making the YouTube videos as well, turn, like yourself as well, turn pro off 3 or 4. And like you said in the last podcast or the one before, when you suddenly turn PGA pro, you think, right, that's it now. I'm a scratch golfer. I'm going to go and shoot. But you're not, like, Pete, I know he's probably better than 3 now, obviously, but I think Pete turned pro off 3. James Robinson turned off plus 4 or plus 5. So you have about 8 shots behind him. Now, you might have got a couple of shots better in a couple of years with all the practice, but you're still so far. Yeah. You wouldn't even be able to enter if you're an amateur. You have to go off scratch.
I also just want to make sure people, I'm sure people know this. We're talking about James Robinson, the tour.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
X-Tour Pro, the ones we've done videos with, not James Robinson, who does the YouTube videos, because I saw a bit of confusion on that yesterday as well. I think the last thing to touch on this, because I saw a few tweets again yesterday, and I've tweeted a little bit about Open Qualifying. Obviously, this is a big part of the podcast today. People saying, oh, why don't you have a go, Rick, if you think you're so hard? Like, if you think I'm not, because I know I'm not good enough.
Yeah.
Like, I know I'm not doing it because I know I'm not good enough to qualify.
I think that's the thing when people say that, and that's what I said earlier on with my thoughts. People might say, oh, well, they're better than you. Yeah, they are.
Yeah.
But I'm not for 1 second in any illusion that I could. And a lot of these people, like the guy I know from my golf club, Dave, who played just for the experience, around a good golf course, I get that. But he's not expecting he can make it. The guys that are making content around it must believe they can.
Yeah.
Because you're not going to make videos every year where you're not going to do it.
For me, I feel like if starting next year, and joking aside before, and I said so I might do some practice for next year's Break 75, and suddenly those 12 episodes, I'm playing mega, mega golf courses, and weirdly, I'm like shooting 5 or 6 under every time I play, which is hard to believe. But if I did, I might think, oh, actually, my confidence is like sky high right now. I'm going to give it a little punt. But unless that's happening, there's not a chance. Yeah. If I shoot anywhere close to 80 a couple of times in these breaks, I'm like, I'm out. I just can't do it. What's the point?
If you're not winning local PGA stuff coming top few, you've got no chance.
But even the PGA events, like the local ones, there's like 30 players playing in it, and it's hard. No one's playing in it. But like, there's bigger professional tours are traveling, like the 2020 tour and the Clutch tour, which have massive fields in them that are much like, they're the ones you've got to be winning to really consider, actually, yeah, I'm pretty good at this.
Yeah.
Or Challenge Tour or whatever, like, it's got to be levels. Anyway, good luck with everyone. Hopefully, wherever you find your place in what it, you know, if you want to play an open qualifying and you want to give it a go for it.
Just a quick one. So, you know Barry, Barry Taylor we touched on earlier on, yeah, who's my kind of friend, he's a golf coach. He's never played the Open. He never was on the European Tour, but he had a really decent career as a golfer. So, he was 7-time Lancashire Order of Merit winner, 7-time Lancashire Professional Match Play winner, 3-time Open Championship Regional qualifying winner. So, he won Open qualifying at regionals 3 times. He had 4 wins on the Tamsel Tour. Four Tamsel Tour victories in Order of Merit winner. 5 times 1836 Tour victories, an Order of Merit winner. 6 times Players Tour, an Order of Merit winner. He had over 100 Pro-Am victories.
That's ridiculous.
So all that stuff. So he's won the first piece of Open qualifying 3 times, but never got through to the actual Open. He's won over 100 Pro-Ams. He's a serious golfer.
That's crazy.
And that's who you're up against.
And he rocks out of his teaching bay and shoots a couple of over
misses
par.
Out by one. Like, that is the kind of golfer that is a baller that people haven't probably heard of in, you know, further than Lancashire or whatever, who can actually play golf to a really good standard. Doesn't document it all online, doesn't post his nice swing all the time, but can actually play golf.
I mean, I almost feel like he wouldn't even put a post out about missing out on one yesterday, did he?
I don't think he has, as far as I've seen. Well, I looked before, he hadn't done.
Love that.
It's just different, isn't it?
It is. It even goes back to the last... You remember last week we talked about the Amateur Championship?
Yes.
And Laird Sheppard won it,
yes,
right? He only posted something yesterday. So he's been amateur champion now for 9 days, and only yesterday did he post something.
But that's the thing.
It's mad, that, isn't
I know,
it?
But, and I'm the same as you. I'd be thinking straight away what I'm going to put on Instagram.
But that's what.
But that's why they're the best golfers.
They don't live in this world.
No, not at all. There's like, more to life than YouTube and Instagram, isn't there, really? Which we can't believe because it's what we do for a living. But it's true.
Like, I almost find it fascinating, like, a lot of these lads, and they might switch the tactics as they turn pro and sponsorship money starts to come in, because having an online presence is really key when you're trying to make sponsorship and you're trying to make money, I get that. But so many of these amateur lads or you know, early pros who, they're so not bothered about social media because that's a distraction
exactly.
to stops them playing golf at the best level they can possibly play
it
at.
It is, yeah, right.
That's a lot of golf.
It's a lot of, I've got a stupid golf rule for you.
Okay, let's break it up.
So, possibly my favourite feature this at the moment, stupid golf rules. If you've missed the last couple of episodes, it's where people write in with things that have happened to them either on the golf course or at the golf club, where it's a stupid golf rule, hence the title. If you've got one that you want to send in, please do. It's podcast@rickshields.com and we'll get them out, hopefully. We've got loads of them in the bank at the minute, but the more the merrier. This one, the good ones make my blood boil, Rick.
Okay.
Do you want your blood to boil?
I want it boiling hot.
Okay, so it's from Ollie. I don't think there's any reason for it to be anonymous. When I started playing golf properly at 15, so about 9 years ago, I was a junior at a golf club. Having taken up the game that summer, I started playing a few junior tournaments and I was given a handicap of 32.
Okay.
Which I think at the time, they weren't official worthy, 28 was the highest. There was a men's four ball, better ball competition coming up and my dad asked the head pro if I could play with him, but obviously making sure I was playing off 28.
Okay.
So I didn't take more shots than was kind of legal at the time.
Yeah.
The pro agreed and said that was fine. We booked to play on the comp. I basically played the best golf I've ever played up to that point, and we shot the best score overall winning the comp.
So it was better ball, him and his dad.
Yeah. Four ball, better ball. So that means just two against two. I always forget with that one. So he's gone off a handicap that's four shots lower than his actual kind of handicap, but wants to play firm playing the comp. Obviously, the committee of old men heard about what happened, and we got disqualified. The head pro, in all fairness, was really good about it and was really angry as well, but couldn't get the committee to change their decision. The old blokes have since moved on. The club's been better for it. So basically, he got banned and told he can't win the comp because of that.
This isn't the first time I've heard a story similar to this. Many, many times I've heard a story where a junior golfer has played in a men's competition, won it, and then after has been disqualified, not allowed to play in it, not allowed to collect the prize, whatever it may be. And for me, it's unacceptable in any capacity. I think it's an awful situation. It's things like, it sounds like that golf club, the pro wants it to be proactive and proactive to juniors. Ollie, you said his name was, didn't
you?
Ollie wants to play in the men's competition. Like, he wants to play, he's done the somewhat the honest thing and played off the maximum men's handicap, which was 28. So he's already taken a hit there. And he's had a field day, which a lot of junior golfers have the capability of doing so because they're playing at the golf club a lot. Like, when you're a junior, you do reduce your handicap so much, don't you, really? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
You're playing so much golf. You're playing more than the comps. So you can't get your handicap down low enough, quick
enough.
And
I think that's where the old men committees at many, many golf courses, they can't get their head around. Mm-hmm. They can't accept the fact that, because I only get to play once a week because I'm working every day, Monday to Friday, I'm at an unfair advantage at a junior who can play every single night and get the handicap down. But that's it. That's golf. Like, if the player shot the lowest net score, if that's what it is, if it's a net tournament, that player, regardless of age, regardless of sex, that's another big thing that's come into kind of fruition recently, regardless of what's taken place there, if that player has entered to play the competition and abide by the rules that are set out in play, they should be able to take the prize. They should be able to win. There should be no restrictions to who wins that competition.
I think for me, obviously it looks like they're probably something against juniors. It's more the fact that if I'm trying to play devil's advocate, they've said, well, you play off an incorrect handicap because your handicap's 32 and you play off 28. But he's going to have a handicap that's lower.
I'm not sure you're allowed to go off a handicap lower.
Are you? All right.
I might be wrong, but I remember something along the lines of, I'm sure you're allowed to play off, because there's lots of like corporate days or other days where the maximum handicap is 20 or 24 or whatever.
That's true, yeah.
And you have to play to that handicap.
Yeah, that's very true.
So if the maximum handicap is 28.
Fair, yeah.
The only thing, and again, for me, is that If it was, and I don't agree with this rule one bit, I think it would be ridiculous to have, but I know golf clubs will have it. If there was a rule that very clearly stipulated that junior golfers cannot play men's competitions,
yeah,
and that was the rule set out in play, and this junior entered a men's competition and won it, if the rule was set out in play that juniors categorically cannot play or win in men's competitions, then the committee have a point. Yeah. I don't agree with that. I think that's wrong and incorrect. That's the only time that you'd ever think, oh, actually, he doesn't deserve to be disqualified. He does deserve to be disqualified because he's actually broken a rule of the golf club.
I've got a question for you then.
Go for
it. I want to be honest on this, and it's a tough one. I don't agree with it, but it's just worth the discussion. So at my golf club, when I was a junior, if you were a single-figure handicap junior, which actually there were quite a lot of us at the time, you could play in the men's comps.
Yeah.
And I think you could win them all. If you were, I think you could. There might be a couple that you couldn't, but I think you could. But you knew that going into it anyway, whatever the rule was. And obviously at the time, I completely was for that and thought it was completely fair, and a lot of people did as well. And I still do. But just to put a different opinion out there, how would you feel if you were a full member of a golf club and your green fees are, let's just say, £1,200 a year, and juniors are paying £100, which obviously it's great for juniors to pay a reduced green fee. It's good to get people into golf, etc. I'm sure we all agree on that. But if you want to play at 10 o'clock on Saturday morning because you had something on in the afternoon, it was your daughter's birthday party, whatever, and it was busy, you know, club comps these days, I know from experience, get very busy very quickly. You go to book on at about 10 o'clock and there's no spaces, and the 10 o'clock tee you were hoping for has got two blokes and two juniors. They're paying a tenth of your green fee. Would that annoy you that you can't get that green fee because there's juniors there, or is that just really petty? Or how would you feel? Because I could kind of get it to some degree if someone was annoyed.
I don't ever think I'd look at it that way. I don't think I'd ever break it down to how much they're paying from a personal perspective. And the other thing, when people get asked about juniors winning, personally, again, if you're asking me, I just don't think I'd be asked enough. Like, even if I hadn't get my name on a board, don't think I'd be arsed enough to think, oh, junior's beat me because he's shot a less net score than me. It's just golf, like.
But what about that? I know it's hard because you're not a member of a golf club, but if you wanted to...
If it was happening all the time, I think I'd want to get in a point going, how can I guarantee a tea time at 10 o'clock?
Yeah.
If I want a tea time at 10 o'clock, what do I have to do to guarantee it? I mean, do you remember the old school things? It probably still happens at golf clubs where the Saturday competition, the paper sheet would go up in the clubhouse on a Thursday night.
Yes, that, Mike. For the week after, so not the next. Yeah, yeah, that just happened at mine. It's all online now.
Physically, yeah. Go down to the golf club, because it was the golf club's way of getting, oh, Rick and Guy are going to go down.
Grab
a quick pint, yeah, or whatever. But I mean, that I found ridiculous, because if you worked,
yeah,
evenings and you couldn't get down, that's just the most ridiculous thing in the world. Yeah, like I say, it's probably hard for me to really give an honest answer because I just don't think I'd be arsed enough.
No, and that's good. I don't think people, yeah, should be, but I'm just trying to give other reasons, because I don't get it why people are so against juniors sometimes. But like, that could only be one angle that people might say, well, I'm paying tenfold what they're paying and I can't get a tea time. But that is very petty.
Yeah.
If it happened every week, maybe you've got a point. But if it's a one-off, it's not really.
Yeah, because otherwise, the 954 that's been taken by four members, I just can't get a tee. That's what I'd be annoyed about, as opposed to who's in that tee slot.
Yeah.
Like, it's almost more the club's fault. Why can't I get a tee on a day that I want to play golf?
Do you think that juniors should have to play with men, though? So you couldn't have four juniors in a comp or three?
I must admit, I'm not opposed to that.
To which?
Juniors needing to play with, yeah, an adult member. And you know what? It's not so much the fact that it's checking up on the juniors. It's just making sure that nothing happens that the juniors aren't aware of. Let's say a rule impeachment, or they've not quite added up the scores correctly. Or like, I feel like it's just more of a guidance, yeah, rather than policing.
Yeah.
Like, it's more like, we're going to put a male golfer with you, or sorry, not a male, an adult golfer with you, just to keep, not check, that's the wrong word, just to help you out, mm-hmm, not to police you. And
I think it's good as well. If you had three juniors and one of them shot a net 65, people might be thinking it's a bit, wrongly so, people might be not believing it. But if there's a grown up there with them, it might be a bit more.
Yeah, that's all it is. I feel like, you know, if it sounds a bit petty, but if three juniors were at school in the playground, their version of an event, on their own would be very different if an adult was there that saw it all happen. I feel like the adult would have a better perspective of the event that took place. And that's similar to out on a golf course. Like, if you've got three juniors out there playing on their own, if it's a junior comp, fine, that's what it is. But I think as a proper tournament or whatever you're playing in, I don't think it's the end of the world if you did have an adult there just checking it.
Fair.
And the other thing as well, I'm not sure how confident, because I've had it, not personally, but a student I used to coach had an issue with another junior, and they thought this other junior was cheating a lot. And that the junior that I knew didn't maybe have the confidence or the ability to raise that subject. Where I feel like if it's an adult there, an adult could go, I'm really sorry, little Jimmy, you've made an error there. Like, that's actually against the rules of golf. I'm not sure if you're aware of that, but you can't ground your club in a bunker. Or actually, by the way, did you notice there you took 8 shots and you didn't take a 6? Or do you know what it is? It's more just giving that little bit of guidance, having that grown-up brain being able to put an input in there.
Nice deep. Input. Yeah, deep. Well, I tell you what then, quick Dear Rick, and then I've got some questions on Instagram for you.
Okay.
So the Dear Rick this week, quite short but quite sweet. I recently started playing last year, after playing when I was younger, but I always used to get bored or annoyed after 12 holes or so I stopped. Really enjoying playing, got a couple of groups of friends I play with, and they are all between a 15 and 23 handicap, and I'm playing off 32. I've had a few lessons, but I find once a week for half an hour doesn't seem to be beneficial, and I'm probably playing about twice a week. I'm slowly improving, but really find it difficult to keep motivated, as I almost feel like I get sympathy, good shots, when I know they're really bad. Would you recommend cutting back playing and taking more lessons for a while, or just keep going? From Anonymous.
Half an hour a week. Half an hour lessons I always really struggled with personally. I feel like in half an hour you can't really dive into a student and really get, you know, make some actual significant changes. For me, I always wanted to coach hours or even somewhat 2 hours. So what might be a good recommendation there is, if he's going to take half an hour each week, why not bunch them all together and take 2 hours once a month? Because you might even get a better discount on lesson prices as well. Then continue to play. And if you've had 3 weeks of playing experience, at least then at the end of the month or the start of next month, you can go back to your coach and go, for the last 3 weeks, this is what I found. These are my scorecards. These are a little bit of stats. I feel like I could do with working on my chipping, on my putting, on my driving. And then the coach can go, great, we've got 2 hours today to really dive into this information. I think little half an hours here and there just don't quite do what you want it to do. So that would be my recommendation. Play a lot of golf, yes. Have two, instead of half-hour lessons every week, have 2 hours once a month. That would make much of a bigger difference, in my opinion.
You know what I don't understand about this question, though? This is kind of why I've picked it. Because he started off, or he or she started off by saying, I think he started playing last year, and they played a lot when they were younger. They used to get bored or annoyed after 12 holes. Mm. They've then said, really enjoying playing, got a couple of friends. And then, but then he says, I'm slowly improving, but I'm finding it difficult to keep motivated. I feel like I'm getting these sympathetic good shots, etc., when I know the bad shots. I don't kind of get, in one breath, he's saying, I'm really enjoying playing and being back, and obviously enjoying it much more than when they were younger, because they're playing the full 18 holes and stuff now, and being with friends. But then saying that they're getting kind of demotivated by the bad shots. So it's kind of like, I don't understand if they want to, do you get what I mean?
Yeah. It sounds like...
Is it because
like
the friends are better than them that's getting them down?
Possibly.
If the friends were off 35 and he was off 32, or he or she was off 32, they might be thinking, oh, I'm great. Is it more than comparing themselves with other people who might be more gifted?
What's that meme? Always play golf with someone who's just slightly worse than you.
Well, that's why I love playing with you.
You're fantastic.
Every time we play, I destroy you. Scorecard in hand, guy wins. Simple as that.
Oh, what a load of crap.
Match play around Marriott, Rick might have the edge, but scorecards separate the men from the boys.
One round for this old course.
At worst, sorry. Oh, yeah, St. Andrews, the old course.
Yeah, the most famous golf course in the world.
No, but yeah, I think, we've said this before, but as golfers, we're also bothered how we play, aren't we, naturally? But we need to just enjoy playing. And that, I think, you know what I was looking at the other day, actually, just briefly. So, you know, on Facebook, your memories pop up. The year 2013, stuff that happened around this time, so what's that, 8 years ago now, there's a few things that popped up, and that was the best I've ever been at golf. And there was a few, a bit cocky, but at the time I was taking pictures of like, because you know when you play a comp at the club, and I think they still do this, you used to always print them off and put them on the board.
Yeah.
I had a couple of wins in some of the men's comps as well, obviously I was in the Flex. Full section then. A couple of wins, a couple of lowest grosses, a few like level pars and stuff. And at the time, I remember what the difference was. And the only real difference was, I think I got my handicap down to 2.6, was the lowest official I got to, I think. So it was nearly 2, but 2.6. And I was having this really good golf. I'd shoot level, one over, a couple over. And the only thing that was different, I remember this so vividly, was I wasn't getting bothered by it. And I remember this weird feeling of hitting bad shots and thinking, I don't care. I think I was 22 at the time, so I knew I wasn't going to ever be a good player. I was, dreams of being a pro had long since gone. I was working full time. And I had this feeling of like, I don't really care. And off the back of that, I actually played the best golf I've ever played.
Who famously now has that same kind of mindset?
Who doesn't care?
Yeah. One of the best players in the world.
Dustin.
Mm. And that's what a lot of really good players, when they praise Dustin Johnson for his golf game, they praise his mentality.
Yeah.
Because he just doesn't care, does he?
No. I mean, granted, he's so chilled.
He's a multi-millionaire, and he's won everything that's in sight, and pretty much everything in sight. he just doesn't seem to care. And I think that's, again, going back to, you know, when you do hit a bad shot, almost see it as an opportunity, right? My next one, I'm going to recover from this bad shot or whatever it may be. And it's difficult, and it can be draining golf sometimes. I mentioned in the last episode of Break 75, sometimes you have highs, lows, but just get out there and enjoy it. Like, enjoy the environment, enjoy the people you're playing with, enjoy the challenge. It's not always going to go your way, but if you stop enjoying it, that's when it kind of becomes a bit of a problem. I want to very quickly, only because we're not touching it loads, European Tour over in Germany, Victor Hovland won it. It's really interesting with Victor Hovland because he's obviously been playing loads of golf in the PGA Tour over the last number of years, competing against these best players in the world all the time. It almost felt like he was always going to do incredibly well at the BMW International this week in Germany, just because he's playing on the European Tour. Like, how different must it feel for someone like that, do you think?
To be over back in Europe?
Yeah.
The courses are different, typically.
Yeah.
So that's going to be different. The standard of golf is different. Obviously, the PGA Tour is the elite, isn't it? That's a fact.
But you just have the best players. If you look at the top 20 players in the world, they're playing on the PGA Tour. They're not playing in Europe all the time, are they really?
No.
Like, he was competing against second place with Martin Kaymer, where you think, Martin Kaymer, yes, 7 years ago was one of the best in the world. I think he got to world number one, didn't he, almost?
Yeah.
But like now, you know, when someone like a Victor Hovland, a young lad who's every week playing on PGA Tour, playing against the best of the best players, I almost felt like he was always going to come back and win that this week, which obviously did.
Why was he over here?
I'm guessing it's a link with BMW.
Oh, okay.
I'm guessing. But also, don't forget, now there's a swing. Next week they're in Scotland. The week after in the Open.
Yeah, it's true. It's
so potentially, over. And obviously he's from Holland, so it's like, does he Does he come back and go to Germany, over to Norway?
I didn't realize he'd won twice in the PGA Tour.
Has he won twice?
Yeah, and I knew he'd won once. I didn't realize he'd won the Puerto Rico Open in February of last year, and then he won in December.
Well, the Puerto Rico Open is the one that they say is a bit of a curse. Like, if you win that, you often don't go on to win other events, but obviously he's broken that curse. He is honestly one of my favourite players to watch.
It's mad. Look, his birthday was September 1997. So he literally wasn't born when Tiger won the Masters. It's madness, that, isn't it?
Oh, my God.
You know what I think's mad about stuff like that?
That's actually crazy.
I was seeing this the other day with the Euros on the football, and a lot of these players are now born like the year 2000. It's not so much mad that he wasn't born when Tiger won the Masters, because although I remember that, I was only six. It's more the fact that he won't remember stuff from like 2002 that well, which for me doesn't feel like, I said high school in 2002.
He won't remember like 2000 Tiger.
Yeah. It's bizarre, that, isn't it?
Crazy.
Do some questions then?
I'm going to touch on two more things.
Go on.
Travelers Championship.
I don't know anything about this.
Anything until the 8-hole playoff.
That is crazy.
So Harris English ended up winning it. He was 13 under through 72 holes. And then, I don't want to butcher his name, but Kramer Hickok was also in the playoff. They had 8 holes. I watched a lot of the playoffs on social media and stuff because it was super, super late at night when it was on, so I didn't watch it live. They had 7 pars, continuously playing the 18th and a few times playing the 17th randomly. And then it came down to the last hole, and Harris English made birdie and won the tournament. I just wanted to touch on that very quickly. And then last thing, because I actually weirdly watched more of this weekend than any other golf event. It was the KPMG Women's PGA Championship, and Nelly Korda, who now has just gone to world number one, won it, and she's famously with the famous sister, the Korda sisters. Her golf just looked outrageously good. She made two eagles on the final round and threw in a weird double bogey as well, which after dunking it in the water. But I actually watched a lot of the ladies' golf and actually really, really enjoyed it this week. Not that I don't normally, but it sometimes gets overshadowed with how much golf is going on at the weekends. Like, for example, a couple of weekends ago with the Amateur Championship, the US Open, US Open, whatever happens in European event, and then the ladies. I always feel like there has to be some level of priority. But I must admit, that went higher up in my priority this week watching it. So it's class.
Nice. That's Rick's tall pro. What's that doing? That 60 seconds for it to pretend he watches the golf. I'll just sit here and have a clue he's talking about these names I've never heard of before.
And nobody shouted four again. Whatever.
Yeah, each to their own. Okay, so we've not done this for a while. We've just got almost like quick fire questions. Obviously, it's never that quick fire, but so this on Instagram. Sean has said, pick one, a driver fitting or a putter fitting. Now, probably depends on the individual, but what do you think is going to be more beneficial for most people?
I think more people would pick driver fitting because they think, oh, I can hit longer in this side or the other, but neglect how many times they use the putter. I feel like in a weird way, you can, if you had a rack of putters, let's say you went to a pro shop and there was 20 putters, have a few putts with them, and weirdly, it's a bit like Excalibur's sword. Mm. You'd find the one that kind of suits you naturally.
Yeah,
you'd want, oh, I like the look of that. I like the feel of that, the weight of it. I feel like I'm rolling that well. It's going in the hole more often. Like, I feel like you can almost do that on your own.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it's perfect, but you can kind of do that on your own unless you're massively like 7 foot tall or you're really quite short and you need a different lie angle or length or whatever it may be. Where the driver fitting, you can't really do that. You need somebody to have the data, the launch monitor, the screws, the fitting, the different shaft, the different lofts, have that expertise a bit more. Like, I don't feel like you can do that on your own.
Yeah, but that's the thing as well. It's how do you determine fitting? It's something that always confuses. No, is it confusing me? Because fitting, like you've just said, I know what you mean about doing it yourself, but if you give someone like a traditional bullseye putter, it's like what you have at a crazy golf, versus a massive like two ball or big spider, and they said try one of those out, I suppose that is in a sense a fitting. And even if you did it yourself, you fitted yourself by going in like that putter, I like that one. Whereas when you think of fitting, you think of like being in a studio, hitting balls, a professional fitter. I must admit, my brother had an amazing putter fitting at Torrex Golf with Lee Sullivan, and it was phenomenal. It was so insightful. But it's not improved his putting at all, I wouldn't say. That's not an effect on the fitting. I mean, I know a bit about
it. He stands very strange to a putter, doesn't he, actually?
Yeah, but it didn't improve his putting. But I'm not suggesting that the fitting was great.
Sorry, Giles, by the way.
No, yeah, he does. But, yeah, I don't know. It is tough, isn't it? I know we have this fitting debate quite a bit and stuff, but I'd love to know, maybe people can email in, real actual factors where like, you've had a fitting and you've actually dropped your score.
Yeah.
And that can't, but then again, how do you measure that? Is it because I got fitted for a set of irons, then played more golf because I love them, and therefore my handicap came down? Or is it a direct result of the fitting?
Too hard to measure, almost.
Are tattoos looked down upon on the golf course? That's from Connor. Would you look down at someone if they had a tattoo, Rick?
Not at all.
No?
I don't have any myself, but I quite like tattoos, actually. Weirdly, I follow a lot of Instagram accounts of tattoos and tattoo artists. I find it fascinating.
Really?
Yeah. I find it so incredible, certainly when it's like artwork, and I can really appreciate it. It's not something that I have, or I don't know whether I would do in the future. I wonder whether that's because of my profession. Like, have I ever been influenced by it? I don't think it is.
I think tattoos, either love them or just, well, love them, hate them, or just don't have them. Do you know what I mean?
But let's say I worked in an industry, and I don't want to,
I heard barbers, I feel like I have tattoos.
Yeah, let's say I was a barber.
Professional footballer.
Do you feel like if I saw that all the time, would I be more inclined to do it?
Possibly, but
I feel like a lot of footballers have tattoos. Loads, don't they?
Boxers do typically as well, a lot of boxers.
Like, I wonder if that's, USC. If I lived in that world, whether I would, because golfers typically do not, like, there are some that do obviously have golfers, but I don't, there's not real. Maybe Ricky Fowler's the only one on tour that I really know has.
See.
And JT.
What have they got?
Ricky Fowler's got the Olympic rings here.
Oh, that's fair.
JT has got something on his wrist, I think. I'm sure he has. Let me have a look. Tour pros tattoos.
Quick question while looking for that. What can't speak today. What course should be on the open rotor but isn't?
I don't think it's a popular choice, but it's one that I've played and think it's the best, one of the best courses I've ever played, Trump International.
Yeah.
I don't think it ever will because of politics or whatever else. But I think as a golf course, that golf course is spectacular and absolutely geared to have an open championship. But I don't think it will just because it has the word Trump in it. take that as you wish. I don't know what to... You know, Seve used to have a tattoo.
Did he?
Seve had a tattoo of that.
Well, that's quite cool.
Of his logo on his left kind of forearm there. Yeah, Ricky Fowler's... Sorry, I've got it wrong. Ricky Fowler's got Olympic tattoos here, guy, on his forearm. And a few other tattoos just around dotted around his arm. I'm sure Justin Thomas has got something. I want to have a look now. Any other quick-fire questions?
There is, but the problem is a lot of them have been asked before, and I don't want to bore people with the same old questions. Like someone said, what's your favourite golf brand? But it's hard, isn't it?
Danny Willett has got an infinity loop on the inside of his forearm, inside of his bicep.
Very good. So welcome to Rick Shield Tattoo Review.
Okay. The problem is this website, every page is like a new page has to load. Thomas Bjorn, famously.
Oh, what's this? Is it Ryder Cup something?
He's got the Ryder Cup score tattooed on his arse.
Nice. Yeah. Okay, well, that was good. don't know how long are we on, Matt? An hour?
Just over. An hour, 2 minutes.
Just over an hour. Okay. Thanks, Rick.
Bubba Watson's got... what does that say?
I think what I might do, I might just walk off the set and just let Rick look at tattoos his for the next hour.
His wife tattooed on his wedding ring finger. Because he doesn't play golf with his wedding ring on. But so when he takes it off...
It's got her name.
He's got her name. Lydia Coe has got tattoos, but doesn't show what it is.
I feel like people are driving along now, kind of. They can see there's like 2 minutes left, thinking, what the hell is this going to extend for 2 more minutes? And Rick's just saying random names, pointing at body parts people can't see or listening to it in the car.
I just want to get to Justin Thomas. I'm sure he's got one.
So people will probably on the treadmill now, or out for a run, or on a long car journey. What motivational quote do you want to give them right now?
Practice in the dark to shine in the light.
Well done.
It's quite good, isn't it? Beef's got beef head.
Diamonds create pressure. No, it's the wrong way around. Pressure creates diamonds.
Oh, nice. I like that one.
This feels now like a terrible podcast. I'm literally sat here with Rick looking at...
Francesco Molinari's got a Chinese symbol.
What does it say?
I wish it was... Oh, can't even be. Oh, he doesn't even know. He got it when he was 18. So, thanks for listening, everybody.
That was a really rubbish
Mel
ending.
Reed has got a parent's birth dates on a forearm. Oh, I did have Justin Thomas.
God's gotta keep looking.
Justin Thomas tattoos. What are you up to this week?
well, working. Harry's on holiday. He's done all the wonderful editing for Break 75, so he's chilling. So I'm thinking like bit of golf, bit of brainstorming.
Has he got a tattoo?
Anyway, I think this is genuinely time we should be wrapping this up now, Rick. You can carry on this off, but we can turn the mics off, you know. People, this is on YouTube as well. People are watching this. This was the absolute... If you know what, if you've turned off, that's fair enough. I respect you more for turning off than watching this crap.
If you've not turned off, thank you. You're a hardcore fan. And lucky for you, you've just been entered into the draw to win £1 million.
Yes, and also what I was thinking... People,
all you've got to do is send £1,000 to Rick Shields.
That's a very good shout, limited. That. What's quite good is there's people who want to be in the clubhouse desperately and don't want to every week, so they have to keep listening to this. So we just keep those people that are hardcore, just keep them listening for ages. No, let's end it now.
Guys, thanks for listening to the Rick Shields Golf Show podcast. We're back for episode number 83 next week, and we've got some new guests lined up very soon, which I'm excited about. You are, and I think you should be too.
You should be.
Peace out, everyone. Come on, James Robinson. Get in the open. See you soon.
Bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When everyone's on the same page, getting things done at work is easy. Make a bigger impact at work with Grammarly. Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that allows your team to make their point and move faster. You can even save time by going from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds. Join the 96% of Grammarly users that say it helps them craft more impactful writing. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said, done.
We're all looking to make more sustainable choices, but making your own shoes out of natural materials could pose a few challenges. At the Allbirds Innovation Lab, they're doing all the sciencey stuff like research and testing to create shoes from natural materials, like leather made from plants, eucalyptus tree fiber, and sugarcane. It's not rocket science, it's shoe science. Allbirds is making shoes better than natural. They're super natural. Find your perfect pair at allbirds.com today. That's ALLBIRDS.com.